astonished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show on a Thursday with Stevie and Conan. The only one place to start here, lads. We've loads of matches to look forward to, obviously, but a few talking points to start off with here. And one, it was thing that got my attention this week is a petition. And it's a petition that has been signed 1,000 times, which isn't all that impressive, let's be honest.
1,400, they're getting there.
It's 1,400 now. Right, okay. So it's a petition, and Dermot Ling, ex-colleague of mine, is running this petition. And at the bottom, his name is on it, Michael Deignan's name's on it, Joe Brawley's name's on it, and Paul Rouse's name's on it. Dermot is a little bit probably late to this debate. It's going on for the last 4 years, and Sky have signed a new 5-year contract. So I reckon Sky is probably what they're digging at the most. But the petition is to sign a petition to the GAA against the GAA selling rights to games that are put behind the paywall. And that's all well and good. You probably understand their Sky position. Sky have come in taking huge games off TV3, who apparently matched their bid. TV3 would have shown them free to air. You can see why people would be pissed off about that. When Sky came into the market first, I'm all for trying things and seeing how they go. Sky came in, I wasn't against Sky coming in. I was kind of curious to see what to do with the GAA, and I don't know, I just got carried away maybe with the narrative that was being put out there by the GAA, which was incorrect, as we know now, that let's see, you know, how it kind of develops in England, and can we bring the games to an international audience? All this nonsense anyways, because it was already there. But that's neither here nor there now. So we know that Sky came in for those 3 years. Now, I would have been completely against them renewing the Sky deal because no one's watching it. The coverage wasn't bloody great, as it turns out. You know, they brought nothing new to the game. The presenters were poor. So I would be completely against Sky being renewed when TV3 were interested, right? That's fair enough. But now, they want it against behind the paywall. Now, my issue with this petition and putting games behind the paywall is that it includes Air Sport. Now, I love Air Sport. The reason I love Air Sport is because Air Sport were turned down for all these big games that the Skies, the RTs, the TV3s were in for. They didn't cry about it. They went and started showing us 4 league games on a Saturday night that were never been shown before. They've invested in club county finals.
Semi-finals? Like, you've only got a quarter-final before?
Unbelievable. With 3 pundits out on the field costing them money. So it's a big financial investment into games we've never seen before. We should be thankful to them, not trying to stop them from doing this. The free-to-air channels didn't want these. Now, I don't know what the fella's motivation is about Air, or do they need to maybe take their petition and maybe kind of reconstruct what they want to oppose here? Because do they want to oppose pay-per-view that can be shown free-to-air, or do they want to prevent Air Sport from showing games that we wouldn't have a chance of seeing before?
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, it makes no sense. Now Air Sport today have announced that they're going to start showing ladies football, which is fantastic. Obviously, when they have the cameras there, there's a lot of double headers this year we all know about, and if they have the cameras there, they're going to show the ladies game. Again, increasing the profile of that. Nobody wants them. Don't start coming to me pretending RTE and TV3 and all these free-to-air channels want these. They don't. They've showed no interest in them outside of the All-Ireland final. So are Dermot Ling, Michael Deignan, Joe Brawley and Paul Rouse campaigning to not allow Air show these games? I don't get it.
Yeah, and it's annoying. It annoys me when I see words like, you know, the soul being taken out of it, and especially when this is just extra games, as you say. Like, this is just an extra opportunity to watch games. And then I was following the debate on Twitter, like I usually do when you're getting involved with somebody, to stay in the background and like the odd tweet that's coming in your direction. But and then so I think it was Dermot Ling that was saying something about then the GAA is not a spectator sport, and it's like, well, what are you talking about? What are we, like, you know? Joe Brawley actually wrote a tweet to you, and then he since deleted it, but it was like, go back to your GAA club and do a bit of volunteering, idiot. Like, you know, because you were saying, like, why can't, like, Air Sport are showing these games that weren't being shown anyway, so why can't they keep doing that? His response was, go out to your club. Like, that option's still there. Go out to your club. Yeah. If you want to go out to your club.
Like, and all this volunteer stuff, I always have to laugh at. Like, I mean, soccer is a sport where players are being bought for 75 million. Like, it's the money has corrupted soccer to the point that it's going to have to break at some stage. And there's a lot of clubs, when Sky pulled their money, there's a lot of clubs going to be in trouble. But they have volunteers that go out. Like, I play soccer on a Sunday morning at a low level. Volunteers are going to always be there. It's almost like the GAA has this complete monopoly on volunteers. They do absolutely don't.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
No, I totally agree with you. Going back to the point about our sport, I have to say, I think they offer a remarkable service. So they do, you know, any broadcaster that's willing to go and video and promote the club game throughout our country, I think are doing a great service. And, you know, we highlighted this last year in one of the shows, and we applauded them for doing so. None of the other broadcasters, apart from TG4, they do obviously the club game as well, but that's the fines, whatever. But on a regular basis, our sport are putting themselves out there now more consistently. And as you said, it didn't take the hump because they didn't get the deal with the GAA, but they're going about it the wrong way.
They're going about it the right way. And TG4, obviously, they provide a very good service. They've always showed club games. They're like a niche station that's Irish speaking. Yeah. Like, I mean, they're trying to kind of group them in with the national broadcaster. It's not really. It's like it's an Irish station. Like, I mean, if you're hiding behind a national broadcaster and using TG4, I don't understand the commentary or the analysis or anything on TG4. I want those games on RTE so that I can understand it. Like, I mean, and you can say go learn your national language. The reality is only a small population or percentage of the population understand Irish to that level. You know, but just another, go on, Conan.
No,
there.
I was going to say, the reality is also is that people in six counties where me and Stevie's from do have to pay-per-view anyway. Like, I saw Paul Roy saying something that GAA goes for immigrants only, but I have a GAA Go account because when I'm back home, I have to use it because I can't get access to the RTE player. You can't watch their sport. Like, so there's actually a more urgent problem there where there's six counties of 32.
And that is the biggest thing that I would highlight is that, you know, us from the six counties, we can't access the RTE player.
Can you not access the player? No. I thought I saw Brawley replying to somebody saying that, telling them how to actually do that.
You can watch it live. You can watch RTE.
Yeah, we can watch RTE live, no problem. But we can't access the player, and I think that's a serious problem.
You can watch it live, though. I wouldn't. You wouldn't really be watching on.
Yeah, but
the player
if there was a game, for instance, Donegal and Kerry last week, if it was broadcast live on RTE and we missed it because we were at our own county's games or whatever, and you wanted to go back and watch it, you know, that would be the perfect example.
Can you not record it?
Well, you can record
Stop
it.
Stop complaining,
all.
Lads. Let's move on here.
I'm only making it quite clear. From the
I'm
six
not
counties,
entertaining no, the six
hang
counties
on, no,
whinge here.
From the six counties, we cannot access RTE player. And
okay.
we aren't always in a position to record games, by the way.
Right, so here's another thing. So Deignan replied to me and he's talking about RTE. Like, I have to put this in the context, and maybe I'm being overly cynical, that Michael Deignan and Joe Brawley are RTE pundits. And Dermot Ling is a TG4 pundit. So, like, I mean, when you think about this, it just, you wonder what the motivation behind this is. Their resistance to air sport, for example. Is air sport's investment in the league, which is the most popular competition, is their investment in the club a threat to TG4? Like, are RT and TG4 looking at air going, you know, this could be a threat to us? I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there because I don't understand.
I don't believe the petition is you know, a resistance towards our. I think it would be probably more towards Sky.
It's not, but it's against pay-per-view, which by extension is against AIR. So, like, I mean, Deignan's saying RTE don't have the rights as they were awarded elsewhere. AIR doing a fine job, but the bigger issue is if we continue down the road, only subscribers will be able to watch our matches. Sad day if that's how the GAA or something about the GAA ethos. So they don't have the rights because they were awarded elsewhere. But did RTE want them? I got information that RTE Air Sport got those league games and the club games without any competition. There was no bidding war. Nobody else was interested. They got them. So, like, I mean, stop saying RTE that they were given elsewhere and RTE playing the pauper. RTE have shown no live GAA between the All-Ireland final and the start of the championship the following year. That's the national broadcaster. I'd love to know why these RTE employees, because the narrative out there is that Sky are the big bad wolf, and that, you know, AIR are coming in now and it's all pay-per-view, and like, you'd be almost obsessed that RTE, our national broadcaster, which we pay for TV licence €167, and you're brought to court if you don't pay it. Right, so they, I know from working in News Talk, that News Talk, all these commercial stations have to, are financed by advertising revenue. TV3 the same. They're dependent, and that's why they sell so many ads in their soccer coverage and stuff, which everyone's given out about. This is a big windfall for them to actually cash in on having a huge event like that. Yeah. RT have all that. they have bigger numbers than everybody else, so they cash in more on advertising revenue than the competition, and they also have €167 a month from everybody in the country. So it's not even a level playing field here. So RT should never be in the position where they don't show GAA rights or can't actually bully the opposition out of showing them. RT haven't wanted to show league. They haven't wanted to show club. And, like, I mean, I don't understand why now the RT pundits and Paul Rouse, who used to work for RT, are complaining about pay-per-view coming in when there's a gap in the market that free-to-air didn't want and our national broadcaster didn't want, and now they're complaining about it.
Yeah, well, if RT certainly didn't want it, you know, they have no reason to complain about anything. You know, going back to the league show last week as well, another gripe that I need to get off my shoulders is, and we'll all probably agree with this because we're from one of the lesser known counties and one of the counties playing in the lower divisions now, there was no talk or mention whatsoever in an hour and a half show of the Division 3 or Division 4 games. Actually, very, very limited talk about Division 2 games as well. So, you know, is this league show to highlight, you know, the top teams, the top 8 teams in the country, and that only, or is it to highlight the 32 counties?
Well, that's a very good point. And Joe Brolly talks about elitism, and he talks about all this kind of stuff, that it's only the big teams and the super eights, and it's a push towards the big, like, I mean, or like what you said, would Joe Brolly not start writing pieces of why League Sunday only concentrates on the big teams? Why can't they on one Sunday just do Division 4 teams, and let's give all these counties the same kind of spotlight that they deserve? Why is this narrative being pushed against Sky? I can understand the Sky narrative, I can understand it, but I can't understand this air criticism at all. It's like cutting off your nose to spite your face. It's like preventing GAA fans from seeing all these games just because they have this kind of principled issue of the GAA being for everyone, volunteers. Like, again, like GAA is the only sport that has volunteers. Yeah. Like rugby, all sports have volunteers at the grassroots level. Absolutely. That's what keeps grassroots level sport alive, is volunteers. But you hear in GAA is the volunteers. It's nonsense. It's nonsense.
And it's not even a weaker count. It's like, imagine how unfulfilling that RT show would be as well if there wasn't air sport. Or imagine how unfulfilling your weekend would be if air sport weren't showing these three or four games that they're showing on a Saturday night sometimes. Like, we're just getting a couple of minutes highlights in from Dublin and Brian Fenton scoring 1-3, and yeah, like that would be all you get then for the whole week, or of, yeah, it would be only like three or four matches as well, yeah, which is, yeah,
because it's such a brilliant competition. There is absolutely no reason why we'd only see one live game, which is what we were seeing before Ayr came in. You'd see one live game from TG4 and then a deferred hurling game, so you'd see, yeah, one of each. Like, I mean, there's four divisions here. Like, Ayr Sport showing two live ones and two deferred ones on the Saturday night, often. You know, like, I mean, it's a brilliant, brilliant service that nobody else wanted. So here's Paul Rouse before we move off for this. So Rouse replied back to me as well. And again, I think he was being vague. He says, Colm, Ayr and TG4 were sold the rights to live league and club matches by the GAA. RT don't have the rights to show them live. They have the rights to show highlights. Like, I mean, yes, Ayr and TG4 were sold the live rights to club and league matches by the GAA because RT didn't want, because, you know what I mean, they were in for them, they wanted them. Like, I mean, these aren't high profile huge games, especially the club. Like, for Ayr to come in and start showing county semi-finals in time, that club, lads, has so much potential. When this restructure of the championship comes, and it's going to come, and the club is given a half a year, Ayr Sport will have been in there from county final, semi-final stage, and that's going to be huge. It's going to be absolutely huge. And unfortunately, they don't have the provincial, which I think are going to be massive. When they're given a proper slot in the year, yeah, those provincial club championships are going to be huge, and the country is going to be watching county finals, and there's going to be more of an interest in them because they've been on television. That is an investment in that, and that's what's going to make them bigger. And I see Ayr doing that. I don't see RT, who's the national broadcaster, who should be showing our national sport more than anybody else. I don't see them doing that. And I don't like RT employees and pundits and TG4 pundits attacking that.
Yeah. And what I'd be right in saying that is, not only semi-finals and finals, Ayr have previously, you know, televised first round and second round games. Would that be
right? I just remember Kilcar being shown in a quarter final match, yeah, and Donegal Hammered Guido or somebody like that. But, you know, they were
so quarter final games. You know, if you're getting games from that level onwards, you know, it's raising the awareness of our club game. It's giving club players a profile, something that you know, they're often overlooked, and it's given them an incentive as well.
It's brilliant.
To promote,
it's brilliant.
And push themselves onwards in the championships.
There's no doubt about that. There's no doubt about that. Right, we may leave that, lads, because we've gone way over time there. We'll have the whole top of the show dominated by that. Niall Minor had some comments during the week, and he's talking about Dublin, and he's talking about funding. And often the time you hear with Dublin fans, it's always cultures and it's anti-Dublin and it's you know, all this kind of thing. And Niall Minor was obviously involved in Dublin, and he's not, wouldn't be seen as anti-Dublin. He's been on Dublin backroom teams, and he's talking about saying it's a Dublin's dominance is a combination of both population and central funding. It's opened a Pandora's box, and we can't turn a blind eye. If it continues the way it's going, they're going to be so far ahead that it'll be difficult to catch up. And it reminded me of some comments from Pádraig Duffy last week in his annual report. Duffy's talking about the Dublin dominance and how it's not really a dominance, because they've, the five All-Irelands they won, they only won by a point, and the other one was against Kerry. But like, I mean, how can he try and paint that picture? What about the absolute annihilation of every team leading up to the final? Yeah. Like, look at last year, annihilating Monaghan and Tyrone, two of the big boys in Ulster, annihilating everybody in Leinster, and he's going to focus on the one game where they come up against a really special Mayo team that won't be around forever. And he's saying that that's not a dominance, because they didn't beat, they didn't hammer Mayo like they hammered everyone. It's such a, I couldn't believe he would come out and try and sell that Dublin dominance. They're not dominating Mayo and Kerry, because Kerry are traditional superpowers, and Mayo have a, this is a one time in a generation Mayo team, and when that Mayo team disappears, Mayo won't churn out another one of them. You know what I mean? Mayo need to win an All-Ireland with this team. So the danger, as we all know, is that in 10 years time, when Mayo go away, then it could be just Dublin Kerry, because the, you know, obviously the population and the finances. Now, John Horan, who's the new GAA president, admitted on this show last year that the finances and the money given to Dublin needs to be equalised. It needs to be shared out a little bit more. So he was talking, there was a payment from the Leinster Council even for coaching to Dublin on top of the game's development from the GAA, which was a mad payment. He said it was a historical payment and they were getting rid of it. So John Horan, who's the new GAA president, who's a true blue Dub, is well aware of this issue. So, like, I mean, the issue that Dublin were given in, like, I mean, funding, which was way above everybody else, is undeniable. That's not even up for debate here. And their motivation to do it, that's a different subject altogether. You might say their motives were fair at the time, yeah, to improve Dublin, that were fading, etc. We need a strong Dublin, all that. But it's gone too far now. So there was, the finances were out during the week anyways, and there was a drop of 200,000 in the grant that Dublin received towards games development last year. They still received 1.2 million. Or they received 1.2 million in 2016. Cork were the next biggest. So that was a, there was a drop in 200,000 in that one. I thought it was an interesting thing is in this year, in games development money, Meade was in second place for with 267,000. So unless they're trying to maybe bump up Meade in Leinster, and because the Leinster championship is such a dead duck now, and like, I mean, that's just dominance gone out the door. It's gone crazy. But Meade are the Meade nationally now are the second best funded.
But Dublin
county.
Are still funded by almost a million. Over 1. What Meade received.
Yeah, but no, but that's a million over Meade. But like, I mean, Dublin obviously would have way more clubs.
I understand,
you'd have
that,
to get per.
You know, and while it's probably fair to give Dublin that bit more because of population of players playing, whatever, I think it has to be levelled out and more transparent in how it is as well.
Yeah, it is, like, I don't know if it's trying to bump Meath up. They're not thinking that far ahead, are they? Like, Leinster Championship. Like,
they need to revive Leinster Championship.
No,
they
do. Oh, jeez, I know that. But I mean, you said it there, the motivation. I mean, in hindsight, it's easy now to be like, oh, Jesus, this is a problem. But most of the country here, almost, like, you need to invest in it, like, because not even just for players and having a good team, but this is where the history and the culture and the heritage of Ireland is set. Like, so you do need to invest in all these people that are here, and the amount of different options they have in Dublin is worrying. And like, I know, even just from a much smaller scale, but Derry, they invest in Derry City a lot more because 43% of the population's there, you know, and Derry City is a tiny, tiny part of the GAA in Derry, so that needs to be better as well because you have a big opportunity. Yeah. So I know it does need to level out in a sense, and I always said that the sponsorship money at the very least needs to be pulled and equal, because Dublin can get AAG, Leitrim get Bush Hotel. It's not fair, but you still need to, I think, cater for the fact that there's so many people in Dublin.
Yeah, oh, you definitely do, because like Dublin obviously are spending that money really well, and I don't think it's a matter of cutting Dublin way down. It's a matter of maybe trying to bring everybody else up. But then another issue, lads, is and this is gas in my own county, right? So you give money to get for games development to the counties, and then they have autonomy to hire their coaches and hire everything. So two players in Laois, Conor Boyle and Craig Rogers, both senior intercounty players, both went to Carlow IT and studied for 3 years for a like coaching type course. Perfect qualifications for this role. Neither of them got the job.
Okay.
A fella that knew a fella got the job. Do you know what I mean? So I always think a lot of these issues, fixtures issues, issues like that, where's this money being spent? Is there expertise on county board level to spend this money well? Is there the organisation there? All a lot of these issues are because county boards have autonomy. County boards are being run by people who are not fit to run them. I genuinely believe that. And that's where, and unless Croke Park want to start regulating county boards and watching them, or maybe put somebody in to run each county board, I've said this a long time, you put in a professional with a business background to, like, well, not a business background, a track record of managing a business, and you put him in each county board, pay him 100 grand each, that fellow will have paid his own salary within 2 or 3 years, because he'll have improved the whole running of the county board. They'll be a lot more profitable, they'll be a lot more efficient with their money, they'll have a market, they'll be able to market properly, they'll get in better sponsorship, a proper business. If you put it, that 100 grand will pay for itself through savings. They'll stand, if they're an outsider, they'll stand up to the county manager. There's all these benefits of bringing in an outside man with a track record of running a business to run these county boards. And I honestly think that's the way forward. But not to go on about that point too long, just a quick one I thought was interesting, and I actually tweeted this out yesterday, was so the GAA finances, the yearly accounts were out yesterday, and the gate receipts are up by 5 million, and that's obviously down to Mayo going to two replays on the way, and Wexford, Waterford, a lot of hurling count, you know, Cork kind of came back, and they're all well supported counties, so they're up 5 million. So total gate receipts are 34.456 million. Now, up that 5 million, I'd always say players should look for that 5 million and have it spread out amongst them, but that's a different argument again. But the one I wanted to draw attention to was the finance director, I think Tom Ryan. He was saying that we have 350 odd matches over the course of a year, and the lion's share of the 35 million revenue is earned from 8 to 10 significant matches, right? So a lot, he was saying that only 40 matches out of the 350 actually make the money, but the vast majority of the 35 would be the 8 to 10 matches. So that would be quarterfinals, maybe, or maybe the Munster hurling final, yeah, maybe the Ulster football, you know, the big games that will get a big crowd. So straight away I was thinking, Jesus Christ, is this not what Pádraig Duffy is trying to do with the Super 8s? So there's only these big matches at the tail end of the year, but, making, but
how,
this money.
How does a first round game in Ulster, for instance, that attracts 20,000 supporters, how does it not make money?
Well, maybe that's one of the 40, you know. I think league matches and a Burn Cup, all these matches are thrown,
but,
into,
but even the league games, there's a lot of league games now are attracting 5,000-6,000 people. How are they not making money?
Yeah, I don't know. He thinks only 40 generates any kind of...
Is a tenner into these league games at least?
Well, he says, okay, you know, there's actually...
60,000 pounds?
Yeah. He says the net income of out of the 350 games that are played, there are only just over 40 that generates any kind of return. Now, maybe any kind of return is anything.
I don't think overheads and costs of lights and whatever are that extravagant.
No,
and
but I think when he says generates any kind of return means... a good meaty kind
substantial.
Of substantial kind of, well, you know, maybe that's it, maybe that's vague enough to kind of cover that, I'm not sure, because it did confuse me a little bit how,
yeah, I would love to know, I'd love to know
money.
More information on that there, because, you know, my understanding will be that if a game is attracting anywhere between 4,000 and 6,000 pound or supporters, you would imagine that there's a huge, you know, cash flow coming in toward, and huge profit.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. It was definitely an interesting one. Maybe we'll try and find out a little bit more about this. Conan, tell us about this Londonderry thing that's been causing such a such a fuss. This has Gaels in Derry absolutely up in arms. The BBC have had to apologise for
rightly
this.
And
rightly so. To throw Londonderry into a GAA conversation, tell us what that... Tell a free stater like me what that...
I wrote a piece about it back in... was it October when when Ireland beat Wales and Eamon Dunphy made a joke, but you know, he said thank God for Londonderry because James McLean scored, Martin O'Neill was manager, Shane Duffy was brilliant. And even then I was just like, for God's sake, like, you know, at the peak of Irishness, like, you know, when we're all together, and then that just made a difference between these three lads who, like, who grew up supporting Ireland and they grew up Irish, you know, there's no part of their thinking was thinking I was going to play for Northern Ireland or anything. They grew up as Irish people. Then obviously the BBC report came, which I wrote an R piece about that, so they just said Londonderry lost to Westmeath. And I know it's policy in BBC Radio Ulster to alternate between Londonderry and Derry, but, you know, come on, know your audience in this case, because
in a, like, GA report,
in a GA report, it's all GA people listening. It's about being sensitive as well. If you said Derry more times than Londonderry that day, nobody's going to care. In a GA report, you said Derry. But the team isn't called Londonderry. The team's called Derry.
And was this inexperienced newsreader?
It wasn't. Actually, Eva Rosetta was the girl who did it. She doesn't seem inexperienced anyway. Seems like she's been there for a while. But so I wrote an R piece giving off about it. been getting a pile of Sinn Féin friend requests since on Facebook. but yeah, it is just that whole, like, it's just, it's, I don't know if it's ignorance or insensitive, but yeah, like, just to do that, you might as well say London Westmeath, because the team is called Derry GAA, the Commonwealth Glasgow Dura. Like, you know, if you were doing a Derry City report, you wouldn't say London.
I certainly
Derry
think it's
City.
A case of knowing your audience in advance of reading out reports.
Yeah, no, I don't think
just
there's
any common sense.
That finally, lads, before we go on to have a look at some of the matches, Croke Park have bought a farm. Did you read this one?
I read that briefly. It was 50 acres or something,
50 acres, yeah. Right? So 700,000. Sometimes they don't help themselves, do the GAA? Like, they're just blatant when so they bought a 50 acre farm, right? And this is obviously to harvest playing surfaces for Croke Park, another GAA stadia. So they used to have to import these in. So obviously that comes at a big cost. So I'm sure they've done the maths, and like, over time this will eventually save money. So 700,000, I would have thought a 50 acre farm would have cost more than that, especially in Dublin, but it was only 700,000. I'm saying only, but this is obviously to resod any pitches. So I don't know how often they do with Croke Park, because when they have concerts, do they resod it?
You would imagine once a year, maybe. You would be,
they might have to every concert. And now Parky Queeve is obviously perfect sod, so if they have concerts there, they're having Ed Sheeran in Salt Hill, or did they have that already? Is that this year?
Maybe
they might need to resod all these, and because it's a GAA pitch is about 2 acres. So I was thinking, why the hell did they need 50 acres? Do you know what I mean? Yeah, that's 25 pitches at the same time. I was thinking maybe, you know, buy one for 10 acres for a little bit cheaper, and it'll do the same thing. It'll grass and grow again, and you won't have to do all the pitches at the same time for 50 acres.
I think it's a bit of forward thinking.
Who's going to maintain this 50 acres farm?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of forward thinking, to be honest. You know, in the long term, it's probably going to save the GAA money. But what I would like is, you know, clubs who are maybe in difficulty and you know, probably trying to seed their own football fields, that they would have them out as well, as not just specifically going towards counties and Croke Park.
Yeah, maybe that's their motivation, that they will eventually, because 50 acres is a lot. Yeah. Maybe there's a lot of pitches they need to help out. And what do you know the goalkeeper's area? Like, that needs to be resodded.
Cage over it.
Like, clubs just go out to the field and just plonk stuff down into that little area.
Well, I think that maybe most of the area around the goals, I know goalkeepers won't like this, but it probably should be synthetic 3G area.
Burn the legs off.
Yeah, burn the legs, but
if you don't resod that in the winter, by the time the summer comes and you dive, it's like the road.
Absolutely.
Oh my God. And there's actually there's a little ridge before that big patch is, and if the ball hits that, the goalkeeper's all
over. It could be anywhere,
It could go anywhere. So maybe this 50 acre farm is to resod goalkeeper's boxes all over the country. Because that's an absolute nightmare.
They'll certainly be delighted with that.
They will, yeah. Okay, right. We'll be back in a second.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens and it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show doesn't look great. There was maybe if they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was one of those, he had the same match as me. He was kind of making out very well, unlucky to lose. Like, let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name.
Fort Minor. Yeah, so we talked a good bit about Ayr Sport, lads. The game they're showing at the weekend is Mayo Kerry, and let's be honest, it probably is the glamour game of the whole weekend, and it'll probably be the most entertaining game of the whole weekend. The game interests me a lot is Tyrone Dublin, only because what happened last summer, a result a lot of us didn't expect, especially you, especially the two of you here in front of me. But it's interesting about how Tyrone, because the whole narrative around Tyrone now, and I'm on the side of most people saying this, is that Tyrone need to tweak things this year. And then I'm thinking, and this is, you've opened my eyes up to this, Conan, like, everyone's saying Tyrone need to be more attacking to beat Dublin. Do Tyrone have to... Tyrone's system works very well for them, right? They don't necessarily have these brilliant marquee full forwards, which they might need if they want a more attacking system. Their counter-attacking game is the best in the country by a mile. They've won two Ulster titles in a row doing it. They've lost to Dublin, they'll lose to Dublin anyways. No matter what way they play, they're going to lose to Dublin. They almost beat Mayo using it. I'm not too sure. I don't know. I'm actually confused about if they have the team and they're so ingrained in this defensive system and they're so good at it, how they're going to approach changing that game to beat a team like Dublin, which they haven't a chance in my eyes of beating anyways.
Well, the more and more time goes on, the more evidence there is that they don't have the top marquee forwards that's going to absolutely control a game, take a game by the scruff of the neck and maybe score 1-5, 1-6. Yeah, on the odd day against the lesser teams they can do that, but when they come up against your Dublin's killer, or Dublin killers, even Mayo, Kerry's, they're going to fall short, and they have to change how they're playing. You know, from the goalkeeper up to the midfield, you know, I think they're as good as anyone.
But are they good enough to beat Kerry, Mayo or Dublin?
They have to change their mindset. They have to definitely, you know, become a more attacking force. I think last week against Galway,
player for player, yeah, in a shootout against any of them, do you think? Would you fancy throwing in a shootout against Mayo?
Well, against
Kerry
Galway last week was it 3 points from play they scored? You know, yeah. So that's a poor return. So it is. They've got Stephen O'Neill in this year, one of their all-time great forwards, probably one of the best forwards in of his generation in the last 25 years, certainly, and he has got to be in there for a reason. He's got to be in there to work specifically with the forwards to develop a way of playing, an attacking way for Tyrone to become more potent. But on the evidence of the first round game, and I know it's very early in the season, you know, we haven't seen that just yet, but they definitely have to change their mindset. Yes, they can defend in numbers and they can play that defensive game, but they don't have to defend in such big numbers the way they do. They can maybe, you know, tweak that here and there, but they have to find the calibre forward that Stephen O'Neill was, that Owen Mulligan was, that Peter Canavan was, and they're going to be hard to find.
Yeah. Is that why though? What Woolley's onto, like, is that why it's better for them to stay like they are? Because they might not have. It's almost like saying Mayo need to find the best player in the country. Everyone says you need the best full forward, and yeah, it's not there.
They don't seem to have it. That's the point.
But is it, when they are sitting down at the start of the year, they have realistic ambitions that they are going to win the All Ireland, and that's their target. They want to win the All Ireland. But you know, when you sit back and analyse them and look at them, have they got the forwards to win the All-Ireland? Maybe they don't, and the system, the current system that they play to, certainly won't win them in All-Ireland. We know that they're going to fall short against Dublin by playing that system, so they have to in some shape or form, you know, become a more attack minded team, find these forwards from somewhere. They have to find, you know, there's good quality players in the forward line. We are not saying that they aren't of high quality, because they certainly are of high quality. I wouldn't mind some of their forwards playing in the Armagh team, but you know, they have to become more established in terms of consistently putting in big performances, consistently scoring 4 or 5 points a game. You know, we knew in the last 10 years when Tyrone were winning All-Irelands, you know, that there was 4 or 5 of their forwards that were constantly putting up 3, 4, or 5 points, and that was, there was a spread of 3 or 4 or 5 points across the forward unit. Now, you know, you're only getting a handful of points being scored from play from the overall thrown package, and that's not good enough for a county of their ability.
No. Is this a thing that Tyrone stay going the way they are, play this defensive system, while all the time on a Saturday be planning another one for when they play a big team? Because they'll win in Ulster playing the way they are. They know that. Why risk that? Is it something that they should be practicing in the background with a view of surprising Dublin with, rather than let's try this next week against Dublin, let's try this against Galway, let's try this against these teams, let's tell the whole world this is what we're doing? Because we have Colm Kavanagh here, some quotes during the week, and he was saying maybe we were a bit of a slave last year to one system. Everyone would agree on that. That's my big criticism of them, is that they're so predictable. And who was telling us recently about it'll come to my head in a second, just knowing exactly how it was on the hurling show. Dermot O'Sullivan was saying that Tipperary played the same way, so when they played them in the first round of the championship, they knew exactly what they were, they could plan ahead for them, whereas some other teams, Mayo, Dublin, or can be a little bit more adaptable and a little bit more unpredictable. But this was it. So Colm Kavanagh was saying maybe we're a slave to the one system. Everyone would agree on that. It was working for us though, and we totally believed it was enough to win. Yes, it was absolutely working for them, so don't blame them sticking to it. But this year, I think every team in Ireland realises that there's going to have to be more systems within a game. I think every team is trying to get to the level Dublin are at by tweaking. And you could see Donegal there against Kerry, they seem to be committing more men forward and equally conceding scores at the back. So it's going to be an interesting year. I think most teams now are really realising, and our game with Dublin last year probably taught an awful lot of teams, that they can't afford to just put everyone behind the ball and then hope that they can catch teams on the counter. They have to be an awful lot more adaptable. And I think that's probably the best way of putting it, that there is a time in the game for Tyrone to play like that, but Tyrone's Achilles heel was that's all they had.
Yeah.
That was all they had. And an early goal, they were snookered, they were screwed. And I think we'll see from Tyrone, I don't see a huge departure from what they're doing, but I definitely see them on a Saturday morning or a Sunday when they have daylight, absolutely practicing something, another string to their bow, because they have to have it. Like leaving four forwards up, for example, and they have forwards that they can leave up. Like, I mean, Peter Hart can be left up. He's dangerous, brilliant distributor of the ball. Yep. So if he gets on, it's off the outside of his left. McCallisky inside, Brennan inside, Ronan
Mark
O'Neill,
Bradley.
Mark Bradley inside.
You know, Peter Hart will walk into most teams in the county.
Yeah, and
Hart
has the engine to make those hard runs off the half forward line and be that link man. That's the, we always talk about a link man. Sludden also could be that link man. Then you can have the Matty Donnellys and another forward dropping back. So I've no doubt they have to be practicing on this. They have to be.
They probably are. And listen, Mickey Hart is one of the most intelligent managers out there, and he will be hurting still from the defeat to Dublin last year. And I think he's smart enough to realise that, you know, how they went about their business last year, everyone knew exactly how they were going to set up. So he's probably smart enough to realise, right, we need to have a plan B, or even a plan C as well. And I would imagine that in the background, they are working on something. They've got to be working on something to become a Tyrone team to go to the next level. To have quality players, you know, there's no doubt about it, to have quality players, but to have to probably fear conceding a wee bit less, you know what I mean, and throw the shackles off more often, because, you know, from an attacking wing half back point of view, you know, every team in the country would love to have a Tiernan McCann in their ranks, you know, Matty Donnelly breaking forward from defence or midfield and driving up the field and being an extra outlet for their forward unit as well. And some of the names that you rhymed off there, they are top quality players, but, you know, apart from Peter Hart, they're not the top marquee forwards in the country.
But
no.
So are they all better though at coming onto the play? Like, their half forward line last year was Hart, Donnelly and Sludden, who are better, you know, facing the goals rather than having their back to goals. And I always say the best thing a manager can do is fit a system to his players. And
you see, we haven't seen them doing that role. We're so used to them doing
they
that.
They should be more flexible. But yeah. I just think they were playing so well last year. They were racking up big scores. They were playing so well that we thought they were going to beat Dublin. So no, you can't have a system that when a goal goes on the first minute, then
don't include me in that now.
We all thought they were going to be double.
You too. No, they're biased.
So they do need to be a bit more flexible, but I'd be a bit wary of them just changing everything.
The
completely.
Whole country were waiting for 2 years for that game last year.
Yeah, they were. And another point here, lads, because you brought up Stephen O'Neill, Stevie. And, like, I mean, you bring it in Stephen O'Neill, right? Now, Stephen O'Neill was an unbelievable player. You know that better than most. And Tyrone teams that you played against, while they worked like dogs, they had a pretty orthodox formation. Like, I mean, you don't want Mulligan, Canavan, O'Neill, these guys back in the backs. They didn't go back into the backs. So they had a couple of hard working forwards, but they had attacking players. But listen, this is the point. What is the point in bringing Stephen O'Neill in as a coach? Who can he coach? Mark Bradley. He's the only lad that plays as a forward. So yeah. Is Stevie O'Neill coming in to coach lads in a game Stevie O'Neill doesn't know much about?
Maybe he's in to try to change the mindset and the thinking process that's currently in the Throne camp as well. Like, automatically, Peter Hart drops back, you know, McLiskey drops back, automatically. And that's
but if Stevie doesn't stop that, if Stevie doesn't say, yeah. Mickey, unless you leave four, I have nothing to work with. I can't talk to these lads about movement. I can't talk to them about making space for each other.
I don't think he has to coach Mark Bradley too much on movement now, because it's pretty impressive.
But one person's movement impacts someone else's movement. So they all have to be aware. So Mark Bradley's movement, he never has to worry about another player, how he impacts them, because he can just run where he wants. But if there's two, three lads in with him, suddenly he has to be more aware of what his runs and who's that affecting. And that's what Stevie O'Neill is going to coach. But if they don't have the four, Stevie O'Neill might as well be scratching his arse.
Stephen O'Neill certainly has to have the freedom to have players at his disposal, you know, to play as forwards, you know, from number 10 to 15, and this is often forgotten about in our games. Number 10 and 15, their primary role in the team is to get scores. That's what their primary role has got to be. And I played in the full forward line for most of my time. I did track back the odd time. But I said the odd time. I've actually got evidence of dispossessing a Dublin player once or twice in the defence. But as soon as, you know, we gained possession, I tried my best to get back up the field, because my number one job ultimately was to get scores for the team. Sometimes you had to be a greedy whore to do that, and that's just the reality of it. 10 to 15, your job is to score. And that is the same, you know, message on every team across the board. You know, yes, 1-6 or 1-6 is to defend and to keep the team. Or 1-7 is to defend and keep your opponents out. But definitely from 10 to 15, if you're not thinking and going into a game, my primary job here is to, you know, add to the scoreline for our team and to try to get them across the line in this particular game, then you're in the wrong system.
Yeah, no, exactly. What do you do? I think the evidence of what Colm Cavanagh is saying there, Conan, and the evidence of Stevie O'Neill being in there, there's enough evidence to say that, well, we haven't seen it against Galway, we haven't seen it in the McKenna Cup too much. Tyrone are going to go with a system at some point during this year with maybe four forwards. Like, I mean, it does look like that. Now, I don't think they're going to throw away, like you said, I think they'd be stupid to throw away their brilliant counter-attacking game, because it's a huge string to their bow.
And like, even just I've heard like pundits recently saying stuff like, you know, oh, they need to let Tiernan McCann off the leash. Tiernan McCann has been absolutely
brilliant.
He's
the one that can go off the leash.
He is off the leash. And like, yeah, I absolutely agree. They do need to have something more flexible for when shit hits the fan and they need to respond, because the Dublin game must have been dispiriting, if nothing else, where the players are all defending and they're already 4 points down with a minute gone. It's like, what do we do here now? Like, we're playing against the best team in Ireland with no plan B. So they do need a plan B, but I would plan A, honestly. I'm not this lover of like defensive football and stuff, but I would still play that counter-attacking game, because I think it would be Kerry and it would probably get close to beating Mayo.
Yeah, at times obviously if they get ahead in a game, absolutely play that when the other team's desperate and pushing up, and then you have them just picking them off on the counter. Yeah. It works then. So like, I mean, maybe not throw it away, but absolutely teams are realising that the link on the half forward line is important, especially against Dublin, and the ultra defensive doesn't work against them or some of the top teams. Mayo, lads, we didn't mention Mayo at all last week, and Mayo were the team that ruined my accumulator. Last year Monaghan ruined my accumulator by beating Mayo and Castlebar, and then this year Mayo ruined my accumulator.
You bought too much into what Chris Barrett was saying.
Chris Barrett got me lovely, but like, I mean, this game could have gone either way. But like, I mean, you look through the Mayo team, and again, this is just Mayo all over again. Nothing new to talk about with Mayo. Mayo are a point away from being All-Ireland champions. That's where Mayo are at. Yeah. What do Mayo need to change? Not too much. Have they got new players better than the players in their first 15? I don't think so. They don't have new players coming in. We know that. They have some good players coming in, but they don't have players that are going to break on to some of the best lines in the country, right? Yeah. So you've got Shane Nally, who's back in, getting a chance this year. Very good left-footed player. Probably best position is a wing back. Is he better than Durkin? Is he better than Boyle? Is he better than Keegan?
Vaughan.
Is he better than Vaughan? Do you know what I mean? Then you have Gibbons back in midfield, and I think Rochford likes him because he played against Galway before he got injured. He was actually on the starting team, and Parsons was wing forward. But is Gibbons better than Shamey O'Shea or Parsons? Probably not. You know what I mean? And then you have Neil Douglas getting in, scored 4 points the other day. Best club footballer in Mayo for a long time, most consistent scorer for he plays with Castlebar. He's been tried before. is he better than Andy Moore and Killian O'Connor or Jason Doherty? Probably not. So these are the new lads we're looking at with Mayo. So I look, I'd be fairly sure, injury free, we're looking at the same 15 for Mayo as what we had last year.
Yeah, well, I think that's a relevant point that you just made there with Neil Douglas. If he is the most consistent and highest scorer in the leagues in club football in Mayo, he has to be given his chance. And you know, he was given an opportunity last week, scored 4 points. You know, throughout the length and breadth of the country, how often do you hear about a player who is the best forward in the county, but yeah, he doesn't get on the county team?
Yeah.
You know, and racking up big scores. I know we've got one in Armagh, a player from Cullyhanna, Aidan Nugent. Fantastic talent. You know, he's played underage football for Armagh and all. And he constantly puts up maybe 1-7, 1-8 in any particular match. Yet, he's not in the Armagh squad, you know. So, a player like this deserves to get an opportunity, and he could be the player that makes a huge difference in Mayo's fortunes this year. And you know, it's
so,
you know,
why is the fella from Armagh not in there? Commitment issues?
I don't know exactly why. I mean, he may have been in a pre-season squad once or twice, but I'm not too sure what the main reason is. I know last year he spent the summer in America, so you know, there could be other reasons for it. I'm not too sure. I'm on the outside looking in, but I just know any time that I've seen him play, you know, he's constantly racking up big scores, and you'd love to see him in there. Yeah. You know, playing alongside the likes of Andrew Murnan.
We had some good players in Leash down through the years as well that just were really good club players, but just didn't
want fancy
players are like that,
and
yeah,
that's fair enough. I remember actually Liam Kearns took over Leash, and we wouldn't have been used to the weights or anything. Obviously, I've spoken enough about that with Mikko. So with Mikko, it was Tuesday, Thursday and Sunday, but with Kearns it was going to be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday and Sunday. So like, I mean, we had, who was it? I don't want to say the name anyway of the fellas. So we're in the first meeting and the panel was in there and they outlined the plans of this training regime. Now lads, if anyone doesn't fancy this level of commitments, now's the time to leave. You hear this chair move. One of the lads was out of there.
That's amazing.
I'm not signing up for that. It was a classic. He was out the door.
That's often put the players, particularly this time of year, you know, from club managers and coaches, if you're not prepared to give a commitment, there's the door. You know, generally Gay would stay till the end, but he wouldn't be back after that meeting.
Just heard a chair moving. Like, it's there was probably another couple that didn't actually come back, but just to actually go at the time, you know, because that's kind of a bluff job really. If anyone wants to walk out not expecting anyone to. Ona Donoghue, lads, he played against Monaghan last week. He scored a point. This lad's a teak tough proper man marker. Again, it's going to be a really, really difficult. Ger Cathracy was back as well. He was injured for a lot of last year. Ona Donoghue was in, played really well. That's a really difficult line of the field to break onto as well, when you've got Chris Barrett, you've got Higgins who's away with the hurlers taking a break, and you've got Harrison and all these lads. But one thing about Ona Donoghue that I heard yesterday, I thought was a great one. It was on the Mayo News podcast. And do you know what he says about how he likes to play the game? Or this is how he described it. He says, I like to deny forwards their happiness. What a beautiful thing to say. I never want to mark you, Ona Donoghue, if that's what kind of attitude you bring into the game.
Do you have him up in Tyrone?
Have Mayo inherited a Muggsy? Or not a Muggsy,
Ryan
McManaman.
Maybe they have. But this is the thing. So, like, I mean, Mayo surprised me last week by beating Monaghan, because obviously the way we spoke about them, and they're only back from holidays, and they've struggled the last few years to stay up into Division 1. That was a great win for them, you know. But then again, Mayo have bigger fish to fry towards the end of the year. So is Rochford saying, love to get 6 points on the board and just let them ease off? Mayo, their starting 15 is strong enough to probably stay up. Probably not at the peak of their powers.
Yeah, well, he did come out after the game and said, you know, it was a change for him since he took over in the previous two campaigns to get off to a defeat. So, you know, it's an added bonus for him this time around to get the result on the board and, you know, have 2 points sitting there and go into the next game, hopefully against Kerry, looking to pick up a further 2 points playing at home again. So it'll be an interesting one over the next couple of weeks to see whether they're intent on picking up more points or will they let it settle and maybe look towards the picking up the points towards the end of the league and you know, remain and keeping stable in Division 1.
Yeah, I think that's what they'll end up doing. Right, we'll come back in part 3 with some accumulators, and we'll look ahead to some of the other games in the other divisions.
Somebody said it's as ugly as Marty Morrissey football. We'd brought him in fairness. He wouldn't know a penalty if it bit him in the arse. I mean,
what is the point of this? They swear allegiance to the cult of Cairn.
But I tell you what, you can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
Is managing Mead at some stage in for the rest of your life a pebble in your shoe that you want to get out?
No, I think I've got over that.
Have you?
If I went to do that, sure, who'd keep Manus and Joe Brawley on the Sunday game? And you couldn't expose the nation to him on his own, could you?
Okay, lads, this isn't going to be my accumulator, but I was talking to Brendan Devaney on the phone yesterday. Well, it was WhatsApp voice messages, and he thinks that because the divisions, obviously it's a very good point, because divisions are so close and all teams are matched off, that a lot of draws are the ones you want to be going for. Now, it's obviously difficult to get draws up or get doubled on draws, all these kind of things. Draws are difficult. Putting a draw into an accumulator just ruins your accumulator. But he made a good point for me. Division 1 had no draws last week, right? Division 1 will have a draw this weekend, right? So put a tenner,
which one is it?
Put a tenner on a draw on all four games. A draw is 7-1. So if there's one draw, you make €80. So you're gone. You're €40 up there straight away. If there's two draws, you make
the
even
one
more.
Jumping out of me would be Kildare Monaghan, possibly.
Genuinely,
I've looked at all four games, and there are potential draws in all four of them. Do you know what I mean? Because they're all even. Like Monaghan, Kildare could easily
be a
draw.
Bad accumulator, would it?
Well, it's not even accumulator. It's four separate bets, right? So it's four separate draws, and they're all 7-1.
It's buying money,
but we need a draw in one of the games. Do you know what I mean? So we have concentrated on Division 1. I think in Division 2, Down are a great bet to beat Cork. We talked last week about Cork and how they're in disarray. Obviously, Powter, I can never understand how to pronounce that. He's out now for the whole league with a hamstring injury. So you throw on top of that James Lockery, who's out injured. Donough O'Connor's not back yet. Then we saw Ken O'Halloran, their goalkeeper's retired. Michael Shields retired. Cadigan's gone to the hurlers. Like, I mean, the Nemo lads are out. Five probably from Nemo. Cork are already a fade, like not a big gun. So they're almost missing a starting team there from last year. So Down at home, Down drew with Cork away last year to stay up. I remember it would have been a stronger Cork team. So you think Down would probably be great value to beat them at home this weekend?
Yeah, possibly. What Down have to do is you know, turn Park Esler into a fortress that teams certainly don't want to be travelling to, and Cork will travel up.
Is it a bit of a fortress, Esler? I don't think.
It's not at the minute, but they have to turn it into one. But you know, on the back of their result in Cork last year, you know, it'll give Down confidence. They'll go into the game believing that they can certainly beat Cork. But Cork, with all their problems, put up a big score against a decent Tipperary team last week, and possibly could have won it as well, you know. So if they're going with an attacking mindset, you know, they will cause problems for Down. But Down definitely, you know, have to follow on their impressive result away in the Dar, Drogheda last week, and try to get the victory in this one.
Yeah, because that was a really good one. The standout match obviously in Division 2 is Tipperary and Roscommon. They're obviously probably the two favourites to get out of Division 2 now, or the top Division 2, with Roscommon, or with Tipperary beating Cork away last week. Roscommon drew with Meath. They're probably favourites. This is probably the big game of them, and I think the winner of this will be going a long way towards maybe getting up into Division 1.
Yeah, for sure. Roscommon certainly, you know, while being in control of the game last week against Meath, were very lucky to come away with a point. So they will be a wee bit sore from that. They know now that they're travelling down to Sample Stadium this weekend to play a Tipperary team that's full of confidence now after an impressive away victory against Cork. So while the bookies has it at 10-11 in favour of Tipperary, you know, I wouldn't rule out a draw in this particular game. You know, this is the one game that I'd be looking at. That it's both teams are very evenly matched. Yeah. I would imagine, and they've got dangerous forwards. They've got an impressive, you know, midfield and good tight defenders as well. So it's going to be hard to say exactly who will win this game. But I would say a draw could be a decent enough bet in this particular game.
Yeah, well, I think Tipperary probably have a solid midfield. Roscommon's Achilles' heel is probably their midfield. In that it hasn't been great the last few years.
Put Enda Smith in there. Yeah, right.
Enda Smith didn't play there against Meath. Now it was Ian Kilbride and Tiger Rourke were in midfield. Fergal Lennon and Kieran Lennon. Fergal Lennon has been around already. Kieran Lennon was a new player to me. They're brothers playing centre back. back and full forward. Two new players, and it's interesting with Roscommon because we talked last week of Roscommon and how they have new lads in on the squad and how they're, you know, feel a lot stronger and in a much happier place than they were this time last year. Their bench was Fintan Craig, solid player, Connor Daly, solid player, Cathal Craig, very good player. Donny Smith came on, scored a penalty, really good player as well, came on. So like, I mean, now Roscommon have a bench outside of their first 15 and they're pushing, you know, pushing for places. So Roscommon are in a stronger position. Again, this is a really difficult one for me to call. I wouldn't be throwing this into any accumulator because like, it's impossible.
There are two counties as well, which I think, in fairness, they've probably rid that underdog tag from both of them for different reasons. Roscommon, you're right, have better depth and they've won a provincial championship since, but there are two counties where you always would have thought, ah, they're going alright, good wee counties, you know, doing
well. I know, and two counties with underage success, and you're always like, there are two counties that outsiders kind of root for, say, when are these young lads? I'm sure counties might have been like that with Leash. You always like to see a new team with young lads coming through, but at what point are both of these teams going to start doing something? Like, I think
to be fair to them, you know, Roscommon made a mini breakthrough last year by winning Connacht and, you know, almost beating Mayo.
That's unfair.
The previous year Tipperary got to an All-Ireland semi-final, so, you know, they have knocked on the door at the later stages of championship. They've just come up against, you know, bigger and better teams at that point.
I think, but they have established themselves outside of that top bracket where they are some of the big players. No,
knocking on the door.
Yeah. Good teams are not just flashing the pans anymore.
Yeah, but like, I mean, I suppose winning All Ireland's underage and being contenders, their players, I'm sure, will be thinking, we need to take. They won't be happy until they're able. And Tipperary doing it once, it was still, you have that cloud of, oh, it was a one off. Do you know, until they're actually players in the game or beat one of the big kind of tree, or, you know what I mean, just get a big scalp to go, they've arrived. Maybe that's the point I was trying to make, rather than maybe it was a bit harsh saying when are they going to do anything when they have done stuff. Right, Division 3, the standout fixture here obviously is your own county, Stevie, Westmeath Armagh. Really, really difficult game for Armagh, this one, away to Westmeath. I flagged up as a really big team in this. So Fermanagh, Armagh and Westmeath look like the teams to beat in Division 3. So Westmeath, Armagh have to go to Westmeath. They struggled there in the championship last year. The talk last week, did you go to this one?
I was at it, yeah.
You were at it. So was it Aidan Rafferty and Mernan in full forward line
Rafferty,
and launching balls into them? Rafferty got 1-3, long ball team. The need of old, we were calling them here in the show on Monday, the Keane Ward.
Yeah, well, listen, they certainly had two huge guys in the full forward line last week, with Andrew Mernan. Andrew's probably about 6'3" or 6'4", and Ethan's the same size and built better. So they did launch balls in consistently, but they also
mixed
it up.
Was Grugan floating around them?
Grugan started in the full forward line as well, but, you know, he drifted out and went back in. Grugan was a great link option for them last week, but it wasn't just a case of launching balls in time after time. They did run it to good effect, but when they run the ball, what was really impressive last week, it was that they kept good width to the game, and when they started to run it, there was wee pockets of space that could actually thread good ball into Andrew Mernan and Ethan Rafferty as well, and that's where the majority of their scores come off. But listen, let's not get carried away with it. I've been saying about the Armagh forward line for the last 12 months, and I know we've lost Stephen Campbell, we've lost Jamie Clark out of it, but they have good quality forwards, and if any team with good quality forwards gets a supply of ball, they're going to cause a level of damage, and Armagh done that last week, albeit against a poor Sligo team.
So is there a case when Rafferty and Mernan are getting the ball that they're a little bit cut adrift of support, or do they always have support runners to be laying it up?
Listen, every game is going to be different, of course, and Armagh is going to come up against a different level of competition, you know, in the coming weeks, but last week there was always a level of support coming for them, and it wasn't a case that those guys were kicking scores from the 21, you know. Mernan scored from further out. Ethan Rafferty scored a point of the day from it was almost carbon copy of his point that he scored against Kildare last year in Croke Park. It was from beyond the 45, caught it perfectly, and the wind took it in over the bar. So, you know, he's got a huge kick and he's got confidence to kick from distance as well. But as I said, listen, while they were impressive last week, I'm not going to get carried away with them, because, you know, I still believe that Division 3 this year is a tougher division to get out of than what it was last year. So Armagh still have a hell of a lot of work to do.
Yeah, no, exactly, they definitely do. And I think the winner of that, I know I said the winner of Roscommon Tipperary will have a great chance, but Westmeath Armagh, the winner of that, you would put really in the driving seat of getting out of that division, because, to be fair, whoever wins that, they're only I don't want to be too harsh on the other teams, but they only have to worry about Fermanagh then, right? You know, I can't see, outside of Fermanagh, Westmeath and Armagh, I can't see anybody else coming out of that group. Division 4, no huge standout fixture here. Like, I mean, Laois, Carlow and Antrim are all kept apart. You'd fancy all three to win. They're probably the big guns in Division 4. Try to get Kieran Dealey, the London manager, on the show this week, and Turlough O'Brien. Both were busy for different reasons, so I think we'll focus on Division 4 a little bit more next Thursday with an interview from one of the managers. But we'll do the accumulators. Go on.
Here,
Jesus Christ, this is what the whole country is waiting to hear. Conan, give me a minute.
Yeah, so I went with a draw because I've been preaching all year, last year. That
did you not hear me saying draws in an accumulator are madness?
No, but this one is not, because this one is certainly a draw. So I've gone for five teams, get it over 15-1. Donegal to beat Galway at home, Meath to beat Clare at home, Fermanagh to beat Offaly at home. No problems there.
Donegal to beat Galway might be a bit iffy.
Yeah, maybe. Carlow away to Limerick, and then Mayo and Kerry to draw.
Mayo and Kerry to draw. Okay, still think throwing a draw in there. I can't see anybody else going along with that one.
Yeah, I'm going to go and have four options, four choices this week. But just going back to your draws, if you picked four draws in the Division 1 games for a fiver, you get over 26 grand. It's not bad.
If your four draws came up.
For a fiver.
We were driving to a league match before with Laois and Mickey Lawler. I'll never forget the two teams. I'm pretty sure it was... I actually forget them. It was Cork Mead anyway in Navan, and it was Dublin somebody else. Could have been Dublin Offaly in Parnell Park. He picked two draws, €10 double, €700. He was dancing around the bus.
Like,
I admired his balls for picking two draws and them coming up, but it was like livid as well. You're always
draws
jealous
are
when
almost
someone
impossible
gets
to pick in soccer games, never mind Gaelic games.
Yeah, so he got the two up on a €10 double. So yeah, obviously four up is going to bring you into crazy.
Absolutely. But listen, my four picks for this week are Dublin away to Tyrone, Donegal at home to Galway. I'm actually going to go for Wexford away to Sligo. I've seen Sligo last week, and I don't think that they're that great.
Yeah, but Wexford aren't great now either.
I know Wexford aren't great, but I think at 5-2, that's great value.
Okay.
And
yeah, that's good value.
Antrim away to Waterford as well is my last choice.
Antrim away to Waterford, right? Okay. Well, because I actually forgot to pick my accumulator, I'm going to go for draw in Division 1. There you go.
Four draws.
26 grand income.
Separate bets.
All right. There you go. Stick a fiver on it, guys.
Statistics are telling us there will be a draw in Division 1. I've gone for four.
All I need
is one. €40 in the bank.
Are they all singles you're going for there?
Four singles. Same as you. Well, four singles. So it's not an accumulator. It's four singles.
Right, listen, that's all we've time for. We'll be back next Thursday. We'll be back on Monday with Keane, actually. Good luck.
Finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.